This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Culture. LGBT plus news. Let's go there. Starts now.
Okay, we are back. 2020. Here we are, baby. And it's going to be a great year. First day back at Channel Q. I can't believe it.
I mean, it's our perfect vision year. It's 2020.
Yes. Barbara Walters, where are you when we need you? You know, that video is going viral. I can't believe they actually did it. One of the New Year's Eve shows compiled that Barbara Walters 2020. And then Sherry O'Terry, who used to play Barbara Walters on SNL, made an appearance on the CNN New Year's Eve with Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen.
Which was a wild thing to watch. If you didn't see it, you were very, very lucky, even though you probably would have died laughing because Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, they were all drunk. Don Lemon was very drunk.
They were all drunk.
Everyone was wasted.
I must say, the CNN one has the surprisingly best New Year's Eve show because no one really cares, which is surprising because they're a news network. Yet the other New Year's Eve shows all take themselves so seriously.
It's like literally the one
Seacrest
you should
one
watch.
And everything.
I mean, it's the best thing. It's one of those things where you don't really expect it to be such a hot mess.
Well, they're a bunch of gays.
It's a hot mess.
Like,
I mean,
taking over.
There was a moment between Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen where they were talking about like big penises online, and Anderson Cooper actually said the C word. I don't want to say, but
no.
He actually said it live on air, and it was just like, oh, what is happening? And they're just taking shots after shots.
That's amazing. Well, that's what you got to do one day.
It was more eventful than mine, I have to tell you that.
Oh, wait. I was going to say, one day we'll be there. Anyway, but that's beside the point. I'm putting some manifestation out there. What do you mean it was more eventful?
I slept. I hit the bed at midnight.
What?
I was sick the entire time during the holidays. I went home for Nashville and Sheer carried the torch while before our break.
For two days,
which is a big deal. But no, seriously, I was so sick once I got to Nashville that I slept during Christmas. And then when I got back, I didn't even feel like going out and I just stayed at home, which honestly, the next day I felt like, whoa. Why would anyone choose to go out anyway and get drunk and do all those? Like, it was the best thing staying at home.
Yeah.
It was the best.
I tend to agree. I had one New Year's Eve where I did a crazy thing. I went to this music festival, and the idea of it sounded really great.
Really?
Like a weed music festival.
Ooh, that does
exactly
sound really crazy.
Until it was raining in the coldest day ever in California, night ever, and mud
disgusting.
Everywhere, nothing to drink. I mean, I was like wanting to go home. So this time around, I was in Vermont in the snow.
Yes.
We do fireworks. We do our own.
Everyone knows, you have a very white Christmas in all aspects.
And a lot of Viv Clico popping the bottles. And then we watched one of the New Year's Eve shows.
Yes.
And then I fell asleep on the couch by the fire.
Okay. That sounds very lovely and very wonderful. But here's the cherry on top. And this is something you were telling me a little bit about before we were on air.
Uh-huh.
But you were talking about you entered into a poetry slam contest?
Not poetry slam.
What is it?
No. So obviously Facebook is listening to me or following me. Surprise, surprise. I don't know why we keep on being surprised about this. But I do write poetry.
Uh-huh.
You might not realize you're speaking to a poet.
Sheeran thinks she's a poet.
So out of nowhere, I get this ad for a poetry contest or a writing competition for Columbia Journal, like Columbia University. So I decide, these are the weird things you do when you're on holiday. You're like, what else do I have to do? I'm not working. So I applied for a poetry contest.
You know what, Shira? At least you came into 2020 being completely Shira Lazar.
You know, I might be a published poet.
In
2020.
That. I really respect that a lot. And
thank you.
I want the best for you, but now it's time to jump into our show because I know the people have been waiting.
Yeah, they're like, can we get some just news, please?
Can we just get started?
Okay, so here's what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour, big news today. Julian Castro ended his presidential campaign on Today's show, you know, on NBC. The former Housing and Urban Development Secretary, he didn't gain that traction in this large field of Democratic candidates that we have right now. And here's what he had to say on a video posted to Twitter.
I'm so proud of the campaign we've run together. We've shaped the conversation on so many important issues in this race. stood up for the most vulnerable people and given a voice to those who were often forgotten. But with only a month until the Iowa caucuses, and given the circumstances of this campaign season, I've determined that it simply isn't our time. So today, it's with a heavy heart and with profound gratitude that I will suspend my campaign for president. I'm so thankful to all of our supporters, the folks who knocked doors, made phone calls.
I give credit to everyone who has to do these videos because, man, that is hard. When you have to say the end is here.
First of all, if you watch that video on social, it sounds like it was the end of the Avengers movies. It was very theatrical. It was very big. But I was very sad that Julian Castro ended his campaign today. He was one of the ones that I was really, really inspired by.
Well, the other candidates are still on a roll. All of them, a bunch of them, announced their quarterly fundraising numbers, including Donald Trump. So where does everyone stand, and what does this all mean? That's coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So as we mentioned before, Julian Castro dropped out of the race for president today, but there are still a lot of candidates, 14 to be exact.
I mean, yeah, there's still a lot, but it just seems like there's such a layered situation because two of the people, I mean, I don't know if people have that same feeling about Julian Castro, but for sure Kamala Harris, we felt like she was a sure winner. She was be going as far as hell as she possibly can, and it seems like, well, there's billionaires in the race, and I don't know. A lot of the candidates are not getting the same amount of money.
It felt disappointing. And even in her departure video, she talked about, well, I'm just not, you know, I'm not a millionaire. I don't have money, right? And of course, Booker even didn't hit his goals, and that led him not to be included in the debates in December.
Yeah.
We're now a month away from the Iowa caucuses. So this is a really important time. I mean, this is the year. It's happening. The candidates have now released their fundraising numbers for the last quarter. And here they are. You might be surprised by some of the numbers.
I mean, let's go through this and talk about it a little bit.
Joe Biden announced that he raised $22.7 million in Q4. But actually, while he's like number one in the polls, he was not number one for fundraising. Senator Bernie Sanders raised $26 million in the fourth quarter. Isn't that crazy? He said his campaign received more than 5 million individual contributions.
So here's what I'm actually very, it was expected. So Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, the numbers, but, and we haven't talked about Joe yet.
But Joe is second under Bernie is Pete Buttigieg.
So that's what I'm actually very shocked about, the amount of money and kind of the grassroots kind of campaign that he has ended up building. And so I would love to know, you know, the perspective of that with our expert on the line.
Yeah, we've got Dave Weigel joining us right now, who covers politics for The Washington Post and is the author of The Washington Post's The Trailer Newsletters. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hi. So happy New Year. And now, you know, as the new year gets kicked off, we get some big numbers here. What is keeping Pete in the race and getting these crazy fundraising numbers? 24.7 million right behind Bernie Sanders, above Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. Well, Buttigieg, if you go by polling, you go by who shows up to his rallies. He has a combination of the Democratic donor class that, to be frank, kind of has seen Joe Biden up close and is a little bit worried that he just doesn't have a lot of juice. I meant to say that in a nice way. I'm not sure I did.
but it's realistic.
These really high dollar donors, like people who maxed out to Obama and Hillary and are a little bit worried about Biden, them. He also just, there's a kind of Democratic voter who just really believes in generational change and wants to be inspired. He's been doing very well with them. And look, really, ever since Howard Dean, but every cycle since then.
Yeah.
Just the online donation cause has gotten so much easier. You see a web ad online, you can throw somebody $5. So he has 2 millionth individual donation right before the deadline. So if you go down the list, Bernie has around 5 million. Warren has about 2.5, maybe close to 3. He has 3 million. Now, individual donation, that could be one person gave it $1 or 2,000 times. That didn't literally happen, but there are people who give, you know, in order to juice it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people. And one thing I noticed from these numbers, which are not complete. There's a few campaigns that have to release them. Mm-hmm. Combined, the Democrats have probably going to raise three times as much money as the Trump campaign did.
Well, and yeah, that's unusual. Really?
You know, 4 years. Oh, go ahead.
Can you continue? I was going to get into that, what Trump says he raised, and like, what does that actually mean? Because he says he raised $46 million in the fourth quarter, 2019. It might seem scary considering each candidate's at 22, but yeah, as you mentioned, overall,
he makes so much money, though. I'm not even shocked by that.
But what does this mean in terms of the race?
In terms of the Democrats' race,
yeah.
Or the whole thing?
Trump winning again? I don't know.
So a little bit surprising was Sanders' success. I'm not trying to undermine it, but Sanders, 4 years ago, you know, the final quarter before Iowa, he's going to go the distance against Hillary Clinton. He raised $33 million. This time he raised $34.5 million. So it's more. I mean, but he has been about this steady the whole time. And the question for Sanders has always been, does he expand his base beyond the people who love him? Because, you know, one election ago, Sanders voters were everyone from hardcore socialists to people who just kind of want to move the party to the left to people who just hated Hillary Clinton and want to vote for anyone but Hillary. I found that a lot, especially in West Virginia. And those people kind of drifted, but his campaign has all the resources it needs.
Yeah.
Even when people were writing about his heart attack, I looked at it and I said, okay, not what a campaign wants. But his supporters are so avid that he's not going to go anywhere. I'm not sure that changes the dynamics of the race as much as really, I mean, the two things that really shook up over the course of the year were Buttigieg taking off and Warren taking off.
Yeah, for sure.
If you look at the polling from 1 year ago to now, especially in Iowa, this point a year ago, Biden was about 15 points ahead of Sanders. No one else was close. And it's now kind of a four-way jumble. So,
well, I think what's
all the money that's flowed in has done that.
Yeah.
No, yeah, and I think what's interesting, and I know the Washington Post actually reported on this today, that Sanders is actually slamming Biden and saying after, you know, this major fundraising haul, he's actually calling Biden's record too weak to beat Trump. I would love to know, you know, the thoughts on that with Biden saying such a huge statement like that, and especially after the statement that you just kind of said.
You mean Sanders? Or
yeah,
did
Sanders,
Biden respond
yeah,
to
sorry,
Sanders?
Yeah.
Just, oh, okay, I wasn't sure.
Sorry.
I think I missed things. So I'll be on the road, and then candidates said 30 things.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, so Sanders has been doing that. If you watch the debates, there's two kind of funny things in the end, and, you know, what you call garbage time, if it's like a football game. In, like, the final 5 minutes, every time Sanders takes, like, a few whacks at Biden's record, voting for the Iraq War, for NAFTA, and then, like, you know, the buzzer hits. And every time, at the very end, Biden takes a couple hits at Warren, often over something kind of weird. I mean, the one most memorable was she was talking about creating the Consumer Finance Bureau, he kind of snapped at her, I got you those votes. So those two things, that's the negativity at the top level has come out that way. So Sanders has been saying this.
His grumpy old man is showing is basically what you're telling me.
But less loud.
He's been doing it. And so the way the Sanders people always saw this race, I mean, that's why I was talking about how the polls changed in a year. The Sanders people always said, okay, well, we just need to get this into a rematch of 2016, except with Joe Biden instead of Hillary Clinton. You know, we'll be the candidate of younger people. We'll be the candidate of Latinos. We'll be the candidate of change, and that's going to be enough to beat Biden. And his people have kind of been attacking everyone below Biden, and now he thinks he's isolated him. And again, I'm in Iowa right now, and Buttigieg remains really strong here. Biden is pretty resilient here. Warren's really resilient here. So it's a little complicated. No one has figured out in a what's now a 14-way race. No one has figured out exactly how to attack somebody without at least some damage splashing back on you. Unlike last time,
I mean,
you know, 4 years ago,
it
was just Hillary and Bernie. So if he went negative, people said, well, I agree with him. Or
I will say,
well, I don't agree.
It is funny out of this entire conversation, and after even Andrew Yang's campaign today said that they raised $16.5 million during the fourth quarter, I feel like even in our own conversation, we have not said anything about him, and I think that speaks a lot of what we're seeing in the media, where they're not covering him in the same ways that, you know, the Bidens or the Sanders or the Buttigiegs are being covered. I would love to know your thoughts on that. And we have to wrap up after this.
I thought we were just getting to him, so I'm happy to talk about him. I actually spent time on his bus in Iowa 2 weeks ago. I was with him in New Hampshire this week. So I spent time with him. A thing here, and I actually am in the media, but I think it's interesting. It's worthwhile to look at how the media is covering stuff, like you're saying. We kind of identify candidates sometimes and say, all right, they've got their following, but how can they break out of that? because I covered Ron Paul when he's running for president twice. Had a big crowd. I mean, Ron Paul would get 1,000 people in a room, and Mitt Romney would get like 500. But there were just more people who don't need to go to every rally necessarily and back him. And with Yang, he's found a real following. He's tried to expand it. He's hired a really professional campaign team. And if you're in Iowa, you actually see his ads quite a lot. And the ads they're not kind of goofy internet stuff. It's often him and his wife. I have nothing wrong with the goofy internet. That's where I spend my time.
Exactly.
It's him and his wife talking about we need to do more for caregivers, about autism, about better health care. I mean, he just sounds like he has kind of reintroduced himself as a very well-meaning, down-to-earth, non-politician with a bunch of kind of disruptive and innovative plans. And it's kind of clicking, but it's not I think if a poll came out tomorrow and all of a sudden Andrew Yang was at 18 points, I mean, imagine the cartoon with people's feet spinning and the dust spinning and going behind him. People would go over and rush to cover him. But for now, it looks like he's got a real following. That following might only be 5 or 6%, which is not enough to really get you anything, but it's enough to last.
Yeah. Well, Dave Weigel, thank you again for being here and all your
You're
insights.
So awesome.
Next time we need to get into who could actually beat Trump and if people should be scared because of all his fundraising efforts. Yeah. Just come back tomorrow.
We'll just have you the entire week.
have a great one. Thanks again.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Yes. Happy New Year. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Weigel and also check out his stories in the Washington Post and also the trailer newsletter. Part of the Washington Post. All right, let's move into what's the tea, top stories in pop culture and entertainment news.
Yeah, so coming up in What's the Tea, Kevin Spacey is back in the headlines. And of course, another one of his accusers have died. Should we be worried? I think we should. We'll be right back.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, we are back, Shira, for our first What's the Tea in 2020.
And it's hot.
I mean, it is pretty hot. It's honestly also a little strange. Over the holiday break, I will say I did this. I watched a documentary called Don't F with Cats.
Oh.
It's wild on Netflix. You gotta watch it. I'm telling you,
what
it's worth
it.
It's a murder mystery. It takes you on this whole different type of. It's about a group on Facebook that was looking for this guy that had released a video that he had murdered two cats, and it turned into this whole thing. And that's all I'm gonna say. But it's incredible. And now I feel like, after watching that we have to talk about Kevin Spacey and this whole conspiracy.
Yeah, because it also reminds me of like the crazy character on the show You, or what's it called?
Oh, You, yes. Season.
The stalker show.
Yes.
Because it's like someone that always somehow finds himself connected to murders.
Or it's just House of Cards. I mean, Kevin Spacey, that was literally him in House of Cards. But let's dive into this because Kevin Spacey, like I said, has been in the headlines again after a federal lawsuit filed by a massage therapist who has now since died, accusing, Kevin Spacey of sexually assaulting him in Malibu 3 years ago, has been dismissed. So attorneys for the plaintiff's estate filed papers in federal court in Los Angeles, basically, stipulating to the dismissal. There was no indication of whether a financial settlement had been reached. Kevin's attorney told the Los Angeles Times that Spacey paid no money to settle the lawsuit, despite some media reports actually saying it. Well, this whole thing is weird because if you don't know about this situation, Kevin Spacey was sued last year by the masseur. Is that how you say it? Masseur?
A masseur
who alleged the actor groped him while he was giving Spacey a private massage in Malibu in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why this is really wild, and this is the crazy part, because several of the men that have kind of accused Kevin of these things have died.
Like,
I mean,
what
it's
are
three
the chances?
Now. It's three people.
It's weird.
It's really, really weird in this entire thing. So in October, the LA County District Attorney's Office declined to file any charges against Spacey over other allegations. Persecutors said that since the alleged victim had died, the allegations could not be proven without his participation.
This is fishy. I smell something fishy.
It's really weird, and it just puts the cherry on top when Kevin Spacey, you know, releases. Last year, he released this weird video of him kind of recurring, like being his House of Cards character.
Frank Underwood.
Frank Underwood, yes. And he was being this and doing his long monologues as he would in the show. And he did one again today, even though people asked him not to. And of course,
well, this year, not today.
Well, this year it was for Christmas. Sorry. Well, you know what
I mean. Saying, sure. I don't know. Maybe he was, all right.
You know what I mean. Yeah. Well, here's what he said and why it puts this cherry on top. Because he says you got to do this to all the haters. Oh.
You didn't really think I was going to miss the opportunity to wish you a Merry Christmas, did you? It's been a pretty good year, and I'm grateful to have my health back. And in light of that, I've made some changes in my life, and I'd like to invite you to join me. As we walk into 2020, I want to cast my vote for more good in this world.
Ah, yes, I know what you're thinking. Can he be serious?
I'm dead serious. And it's not that hard, trust me. The next time someone does something you don't like, you can go on the attack, but you can also hold your fire and do the unexpected. You can kill them with kindness.
Are you kidding me?
That is the evidence.
He literally just admitted to murdering everyone.
I mean, I think we should start a podcast called
The Kevin Spacey Chronicles, the real.
And we try to investigate it, but then I'm worried that we might be killed.
I don't have time for no white men trying to, one, sexually assault me and then murder me. So we got more.
There's something here.
I mean, there's most definitely something here, and maybe we can dive in to do it, but can it be anonymous? I don't know. I have a very distinct voice here.
Yeah, I think they would put us through some Google voice tracker.
Okay, we got more coming up in What's the Tea. You know, the most hilarious story about Gabrielle Union calling out an Uber driver is coming up next, and let's just say, when you gotta go, you gotta go. We'll be right back.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, we're back with What's the TR Entertainment Pop Culture Stories of the Day. And just to wrap up the Kevin Spacey story that we were talking about a little bit last break was, I just want to say this, you know, obviously Kevin has been accused by several men of sexual misconduct. In July, sexual assault charges filed against Spacey in Massachusetts involving an 18-year-old man were also dropped. And this latest filing comes amid news that another Spacey accuser, he was actually a famous Norwegian author, Ari Bein, died by suicide. And so I wanted to tie that up into everything before we moved on, which actually, Shira, have you ever been in a Uber? And the Uber's like, oh, can I stop? Do you mind if I like stop for gas or if I stop to
bathroom.
Do something?
I've had the bathroom breaks.
But have you been to the bathroom or they went to the bathroom?
They went to the bathroom.
Okay, so that's super funny because that same thing happened to Gabrielle Union, but in a different way. So she was planning on to have this, you know, very safe new year where she's like, okay, I'm going out. I need to be responsible. I'm probably going to have some drinks. I need to order an Uber. Well, she gets her Uber driver. He pulls up. And according to the actress, she said that her chauffeur for the evening got incredibly comfortable at her home after asking to use her bathroom.
Oh my God.
And then also taking his time to do so. So this is what she says.
Oh God.
Trying to be responsible and use Uber, and our driver asked to use our bathroom. She said 15 to 20 minutes later, insert sad face, dude dropped a deuce.
Well, he's just hanging out on his phone. That is the most awkward but funny thing ever.
She said, I'm pleased. We clearly have a home and available reading materials that screams, come on in, get comfortable, and drop the kids off at the pool. Welcome to 2020, folks. And, of course, there's poop and laughing emojis.
Listen, when you gotta go, you gotta go.
First of all, I would never allow an Uber driver in my home.
It's one of those
things. Are you crazy?
I mean, the thing is, though, if so, you feel kind of bad where you feel like someone,
never.
Like, to be of service.
Nope. I said, there's a bush out by the, down the street.
If someone really needed to go and it's New Year's Eve, you kind of like, I'm doing New Year's Eve right. I'm
going
to be giving back and helping someone out. I mean, wouldn't you want someone to do that for you if you really needed to go?
You know, actually, little fun fact about me. I actually have no problems using the bathroom
outside.
Or
you can hold it in?
I can hold it in forever. I do it actually all the time during
it's
the show.
So
it's
unhealthy.
Not good. I know.
So unhealthy.
I need to start going to the bathroom. But
what, are you like 6 years old?
No, but I also... But here's the thing. I go to the moment where I'm like, oh, I should really go to the bathroom. And then I get lazy and I change my mind. I'm like, oh, I don't have to anymore. And then afterwards, I have to use the bathroom. So for me, I can use the bathroom literally anywhere. So that's no problem for me.
No, I feel just would like, never. I don't know. I'm really bad at the squatting thing. I know it's actually, you're supposed to naturally squat as a woman.
Oh.
When I was in Nepal and all they had was holes in the on the floor and the ground.
Oh, I was like, what, Nepal? For some reason, I was thinking you were thinking about, you were talking about Canada. I was like, y'all don't have modern bathrooms?
Well, Canada, if you're outside, I guess. I don't know if you're hiking. No.
Yeah.
We don't live in igloos either, by the way. but when I was in Nepal, I had a hard time squatting every time I would like pee on my shoe.
Ew.
I just can't do it. It's like, I can't do it.
Okay, I didn't need to know about the
pee
hitting shoe.
Anyway, at any rate, I think it's a really nice thing. Depending, I think you need to check your Uber driver out. If you feel like they're not sketchy, I feel like it might be like the beginning of a horror, like a murder movie.
I don't care if it's Miss Daisy from Driving Miss Daisy and she's asking me to use my bathroom. Miss Honey, we're going to have to go down to the 7-Eleven. That's where you're going to pee. Not in my home.
I feel like if it's daytime, what if it's like midnight or 1 a.m.?
Nope, I'm not doing it. I don't care.
My God.
I don't care. She's not, and then have the audacity to poop in a stranger's home. You are crazy.
But sometimes you just gotta let it go.
This ain't Elsa. I'm not Elsa from Frozen. I don't gotta let nothing go, Shira Lazar. I don't have to let nothing go.
Now we know where you stand.
Well, if you want to know more about this story and other entertainment stories that I love to spill on our website at wearechannelq.com, and make sure to keep us favorited on that radio.com app.
Okay, while you may be seeing more Do Not Sell My Information links and what it actually means for you and your privacy online, that's coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, it's top of the hour, which means what's trending in the news time.
Oh, God, so I'm stuck in my mic. I don't know what happened, but I'm, like, literally trapped. I don't know how this happened, but hi.
We don't want you to leave here in the new year. Okay, let's get into this, because this is some stuff that happened in California that could be impacting a lot of states. Well, hopefully. So these Do Not Sell My Information links popped up on websites New Year's Day. You might have noticed some if you're in California. Companies scrambled to comply with California's new consumer privacy protection law that allows customers to instruct businesses to not sell their personal information, which I think is great, but I also just wish the companies would take it more upon themselves to make it more, obvious.
Well, it's
still
funny because
no one reads through all that stuff.
Did you notice that on Instagram, Instagram actually made you read their new privacy act because of this? I saw something on Instagram about were kind of alerting everyone about this new consumer privacy act because a lot of consumers are on Instagram and they are buying things off of Instagram.
Yeah, because a lot of these companies are selling information to other companies.
Well,
okay.
It's happening. It's true, but at least you there's something being in play where you have to now you can actually choose. It's not like you're just signing your life away.
So yeah, it's part of the California Consumer Privacy Act, went into effect yesterday, and this is part of the most powerful consumer privacy protection law of its kind in the U.S. Advocates believe that the law passed by the state legislature in 2018 could be used as a model in other states or nationally. So these Do Not Sell My Info links also began showing up at the bottom of websites you might have noticed for businesses like Home Depot and Ralph's, or as pop-ups on publications like Us Weekly. And the law says a clear and conspicuous link on the business's homepage must help a consumer to opt out of the sale of the consumer's personal information. So your personal information is being sold to other companies, and now these companies need to tell you that you're either opting in or out.
Well, here's the thing.
They need to make it obvious.
You know what I was thinking of, even with this whole California Consumer Privacy Act? Like, I feel like there's fine print within the fine print, where even if you're reading this and they're saying, oh, we're not going to sell your information anymore if you say you don't want that, and these links are going to pop up, but there's still something that's going to kind of capture where they still can get a little bit of something.
There's like a shiny object, and they're like, oops, okay, you said yes.
Yeah, you said yes. I feel like they're still going to get whatever they want, right?
Yeah, I feel like there needs to be, but that could be the skeptic in us, Ryan.
True. That's true. What is it? The half glass full?
Half glass empty attitude, but we're half glass full in 2020.
We're
overfilling. Flowing.
Wow.
Flowing.
Shira is having
a stroke.
Champagne is flowing. Oh, let's go there.
Okay. But I must say, Facebook, let's move on to our next story, because Facebook actually did something good for the first time in a while.
Okay, I love that.
They began removing a series of dangerous ads from the platform that actually targeted LGBTQ people and was spreading misleading information about HIV prevention drugs. But it did take more than 3 months for them to do this.
That's why I'm like, well, here's the thing. That's why I didn't really want to congratulate them, because I did know that this is something that they've been working on. And after, you know, what's his name?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg. I don't care about that evil white man. He's like Dr. Evil, in my opinion. I feel like, you know, he already said that he doesn't care if, you know, fake news is out there about politicians. So it's like he didn't really care about other things as well. And it felt like they took forever to even care about LGBTQ people that were being targeted.
It feels like because it happened before the holidays. Like, listen, we're really busy for the holidays.
Let's just get it over with.
Things are going to be taking a long time, right? It's going to take longer than usual. So the ads in question originated with a number of law firms and pushed these falsehoods about the side effects of PrEP, drugs like Truvada, which, of course, as we know, greatly reduce the risk of getting HIV.
Right.
They falsely claimed that HIV-negative people taking the drugs were at risk of bone density and kidney issues.
What?
Yeah, many of the ads, they were run by pages like Truvada Compensation Center and Truvada Side Effects, which made it seem like it was real information. They urged readers to contact the law firms for an evaluation for possible compensation.
How is this not, this stuff is not verified in the ad process? Like, I used to work in that, where I would put ads on things, and they barely wanted to even let it go sometimes. So I'm like, I don't really understand how stuff like this can just kind of get under the radar.
I don't know. Because even as media companies that are official, it's hard to run these
ads.
It's
so hard.
Yeah. Well, GLAAD is the one who found these things, and then they let Facebook know about the ads mid-September. Mid-September, and it took until now. So Matthew Lasky, who's the communication director at GLAAD.
We've talked to him. I think we know him.
Said they were told last Friday, more than 3 months after reporting the ads to Facebook, that one of the fact-checking agencies they contacted, Science Feedback, concluded some of the ads were indeed misleading and would be removed. So at least it's happening. Let's move on to some resolutions for 2020.
I hate that word. I do not like resolutions.
Well, the Trumps had some answers for their New Year's resolutions. First Lady Melania Trump said she wanted peace on the world.
No, she actually
peace
said that. That's not a typo, and that's not a Vanessa's typo either. That is
peace on the world. I mean, I want it on the world. Let's get that peace on the world. A peace sign on the world. You can't draw on the world.
But this is also what Trump had to say, right?
Peace is right, but I'm not sure you're supposed to say resolution out loud. Okay, so I don't want to say what my resolution is, because I think we jinx it, all right? But I can tell you we really have a good resolution, and it's a resolution for our country. We love our country. Our country has never done better than it's doing right now. We have the best unemployment numbers. We have the best employment numbers. Almost 160 million people are working. African American, Asian American, Hispanic American. They have the best numbers in the history of our country. We're very happy. And we rebuilt our military. We cut taxes down, the lowest in history, biggest tax cut ever. We're doing great. Our country is really the talk of the world. Everybody's talking about it. Thank you very much.
Trump, that's a birthday wish. You don't want to jinx a birthday wish.
A
resolution, actually, you want to say out loud so that it happens. That's the point of resolutions and sharing them.
So that's actually hilarious, because I had to second guess. I was like, wait, am I not supposed to tell anyone my resolutions?
See, he's spreading misleading information.
Is that why nothing has ever came?
People. Wait, we're going to have millions of people in America who are now not going to share the resolutions with anyone.
It's under lock and key, don't you ask me.
I mean, and then possibly we're going to have a lot of good things that should be happening, not happening.
Well, what a segue.
Or maybe bad things that we don't want to
happen. This is honestly awkward with what we're about to talk about, right?
Yeah, it's all about New Year's resolutions. We're going there. I mean, because you can't start a New Year's show without talking about the resolutions. It's
true.
Like on everyone's minds.
I don't think they matter, though.
Even though we're always over them, yeah, we want to talk about if they matter. And we actually have a performance coach joining us after this to share how to set goals that actually work.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So if you haven't realized yet, the new year is upon us. We're in 2020, folks.
Literally had no clue we were in the new year.
Maybe you just woken up he had a long hangover.
I've been asleep the entire time.
But also that means resolutions. And it's, I always think it's really interesting. It's like new year, new me. And, and there was actually this meme that went around and was like, wow, I'm so excited to meet all these new people tonight or tomorrow morning, because all these people act like, oh, I'm going to be a new person.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, you're totally a new person.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. I've never enjoyed the idea of resolutions. I feel like it adds too much pressure. I mean, I feel like we talked about this last year, where I was like, you know, resolutions can just add so much anxiety with people that probably really deal with it because they're expecting to say, oh, okay, this is what I can look forward to. And yeah, it's good to set goals, but honestly, how much pressure does that add on you? I don't know.
One of the resolutions should be to not be so anxious. Ever think about that? Anyway,
I guess, yeah, sure. Yeah, you might be the new therapist.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, and I'm free, by the way. Actually, maybe I should.
So quality
be.
Control. I get it. I get why you're free.
I need some money in 2020. Some extra income. Okay. Well, I was going to say, because I feel like I'm also figuring this out for myself. Like, how do you maintain goals or quote unquote resolutions or whatever you might call it? Because I do think it is possible. While we all, a bunch of us say who are skeptical of
yeah,
it, that
right.
it's not, or who cares, or like, let's just throw them out the window. Dr. Josh Klapo is with us, who's a clinical psychologist, behavioral scientist, performance coach, psychological correspondent.
He's our psychological a little bit of everything.
Correspondent. He's back with us to help us get into this routine and this resolutions plan and process he's created. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, guys. Good to be back.
Yes, happy New Year.
So you too.
Let's get into this. Is there a point okay. of having resolutions?
I mean, so yes, it's fine to have resolutions, but I love the opening because the opening, particularly what Ryan was saying, is this whole idea that we have to make a change and declare it starting, you know, January 1st. While it's a nice idea, it does add a lot of pressure that, frankly, I think a lot of people are not ready for.
Yeah,
and they really just get caught. They get kind of caught up in the hey, it's New Year, it's wonderful, it's going to be a great decade, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. And then you kind of sit back and realize, like, how the heck am I going to do that? And that's where people get into trouble.
Well, isn't it better, though, to at least start off with some goals than nothing at all? Because you're like, it just doesn't work.
No, see, I like people to have goals, but here's what I don't like as a psychologist and a behavioral scientist, not as a psychological correspondent. I don't like.
You said that in your thing, psychological.
I know. I was like,
okay. So anyway.
Here's what I don't like. I see people who set goals, and they set the goals, and they don't succeed. And there's nothing wrong. It's not to say that we have to be successful all the time. But what happens is they set goals, they don't succeed. They get distraught. They get distressed. They get frustrated. And then they set it again, and they get frustrated again. And what happens is you develop this kind of learned helplessness where you sort of say, I can't do it. I can't do it. And the problem is it's not likely that you can't do it. It's that you really had no plan to be successful. And so all that you've learned is how to be unsuccessful. So while there's nothing wrong with goals, set a goal that you know you can achieve, or at least you have a plan to achieve, versus one that you just kind of throw caution to the wind and hope it comes through.
That's interesting, because even while you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking about kind of the envy that also can surround New Year's, if you think about it. Like, if you are surrounded by people who are setting their own goals, and they're maybe semi-already kind of successful, or they set this plan of success, you're kind of sitting there like, wow, I wish I had what they're having, and that kind of that motivation, and you're like, well, this is a crappy New Year because I don't know where I start and where I begin and where I end and all these things. And it just creates this unhealthy enviousness, you know?
It is. And now, here's the thing, though, Ryan, and I don't know if this is good or bad psychology. In terms of helping you out, when you see all those people setting all those goals and they're making all those plans and they're already on their way, we know about 60 to 70% of them will never achieve it anyway. So if you're feeling envious, you can sort of sit back and go, chances are they're not going to make it. And I don't know if that's good or bad.
Wait, as a psychologist, aren't you supposed to say, like, you're not comparing, don't compare yourself to anyone else. You have to compare yourself to yourself.
I love that he did that for me. He said that for me.
There's a theory. It's called social comparison theory. We do it every day.
Yeah.
It's called upward comparison and downward comparison. And we have a hard time if the upward comparison, if somebody's too far away from where we want to be, or wherever we think we can be, then we get envious and we feel distraught. If they're slightly behind us, we call it downward comparison, which is, frankly, well, I'm doing better than they are, but it's close and I'm doing better. We do that every single day. Here's the thing. There is no reason why, if you don't have a reasonable goal, you can't use a plan to achieve that goal. Where you get into trouble is when you say, I just got to stay motivated and dedicated and have good intentions. Because while all that's true, that's not enough to create lifelong change.
Well, yeah, let's get into this five-step process.
Yeah, I love the acronym.
Yeah, SMART. It's the SMART acronym.
Yes.
Can you explain?
It's from his book.
Absolutely. It is from the book. Here's the thing. We, myself and my co-author, for years we were clinically and through some of our other work with groups, we were helping people make life change. And we realized that if you take all the science and kind of boil it down, you can kind of boil the behavioral science down to an acronym, and it uses the word SMART. And the idea behind it is there are five steps to making and sustaining any change. Okay. And we can go through them if you like.
Yeah,
yes,
just go.
Let's
yeah,
do
we,
it.
We have a moment. So, yes, please.
Okay, good. So acronym is SMART. S stands for setting specific and reachable goals. Two criteria here. Really simple. If you can't count it or measure it, it's not specific. So the idea of I'm going to get healthy, I'm going to get in good shape, I'm going to save money, those are great ideas. Those aren't goals. I am going to go to the gym 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 6:30 a.m. Those are specific and they're accountable.
Specific,
the other thing is reachable. Do not shoot for the stars with your goals. I want you to make goals that are simple, achieve them, and then move on. And that's something that's kind of counter to what most people think. So specific goals. M stands for monitoring. And man, technology has helped us so much here. Research is super clear. If you keep track of the behavior that you're trying to do, you're going to do it more. It's simple scientific research, and we got trackers for everything now. I mean, you can track, I don't even want to get into it. You can track anything from money to food to sex. You can track any of that stuff. Monitor your behavior, and you're more likely to do it.
I don't want to track my sex life because it would be very sad, and I'm already a little sad.
Maybe you need to back your goals up.
My SMART acronym.
Let's be specific.
Right.
Okay, let's go move on to the A in SMART.
Very quickly, because we're running out of time.
A is arrange your environment, arrange your world for success. This is super simple. We don't do it all. We never do it. Look, if you want to get up and go to the gym in the morning, lay your clothes out the night before.
Yeah.
Make the coffee the night before. Make small changes in your world to increase the chances you're going to do it. R is recruit support. We all like to be supported, but just because we're making a change, it doesn't mean people are going to come out of the woodwork to support us. So ask for the support.
Yeah.
And P, biggest mistake I see people making. They say, when I lose 30 pounds, I'm going to give myself this. T stands for treat. Every week that you stick with it, I want you to treat yourself so that it gets you through to the next week. Don't deny yourself for 6, 8, 10 weeks because you may never make it that long. A treat a week.
All right. Dr. Josh Klapo, this is great.
I like a treat a week. That's cute.
Dr. Josh, where can people find you? You have a site for your book, Living Smart Lifestyle Change Made Simple.
You can get it on Amazon or any online bookseller, or just go to my webpage at joshklapo.com.
All right. Well, Happy New Year. Thanks again.
Thank you, Dr. Josh. Can't wait to have you back.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Yeah, I love those. I actually agree with all of them. All right, coming up now, at this point, you might have already seen this viral clip of Pope Francis pulling his hand away and smacking one of his pilgrims. Yeah. Well, he's apologized, but was he really in the wrong? Okay, we go there after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So we all love a good viral video.
I love a good viral something.
Well, this one was cringy.
That was Pope. Weird. Sorry, I didn't mean to go there.
Pope Francis, but you did go there.
I did.
The Pope was greeting children and pilgrims in St. Peter's Square on Tuesday.
Doing his very Pope-like duties.
He was on his way, making his way to the nativity scene at the center of the Vatican City.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
You know, when a woman, you know, tried to get his hand, and you could see him on video that he was visibly upset. He began slapping the woman's hand in an attempt to free himself from her grip. And he briefly shouted at the woman. Now, of course, this moment went viral, was shared everywhere, and it really it forced him to apologize the following day for the flash of anger or self-protection. He admitted he had lost patience, saying, "We lose patience many times. It happens to me, too. I apologize for the bad example given yesterday." But was it really a bad example? Should he have apologized? Richard Green is here with us, former attorney and body language expert. Thanks for being back.
You're welcome. And also you can add even though I am Jewish, a huge fan of Pope Francis.
Great.
Oh, I love that for you. First of all, here's the thing is what I was going to say. I had no clue that Pope Francis was like a huge celebrity in the way that people like fan of. And I was like, I don't know if that's just a religious thing because he's kind of looked at as a holy figure.
He's a celebrity.
And I had no clue that he was a celebrity. So when I saw the video and seen this woman kind of like, I don't want to use the word attacking, but somewhat kind of being aggressive with him, like in a Michael Jackson type of way, I was like, whoa, this is wild. And I felt like he reacted just like anyone would. He's a human, right?
He actually is. Newsflash, he is a human. And even though I do believe, honestly, that if Jesus Christ were to reincarnate, he would be acting very much like Pope Francis. I think Pope Francis is very Jesus-y. But I want you to know what this Asian woman did actually was a crime. She legally committed battery. Let me read you the definition.
All right,
of battery.
Wait. Actually, we need to take. We set this up, and we're going to tease. We're going to get into this.
Radio
after,
goes by so fast.
Yeah, sorry. After the break, we're going to get into if she what she did was actually illegal and what he could have done differently.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Pope Francis in the headlines for slapping a pilgrim's hand who just wanted to connect with him.
Is that the actual title of that lady, a pilgrim?
Yeah, a fan slash pilgrim. Richard Green is back with us, former attorney and body language expert, as we dive in to the legalities around this and what he could have done differently. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I mean, the poor guy almost had his arm ripped out of his shoulder socket.
And he's an old guy.
He's 83 years old. You can see from his face that he was wincing, right? And he didn't slap her like in a judgmental way. He was literally using his other hand to try to free himself from this death grip that this so-called pilgrim had on him. And actually what this woman did is technically against the law. It's a crime. It's called battery. So the definition of battery is the crime of unconsented physical contact with another person, even when the contact is not violent, but merely menacing or offensive. So this was clearly unconsented. You could see that.
But it's kind of part of his job, though. Was it unconsented because he was in walking in a place where people were trying to get his hand? Like, that was the point
of
him being there. Yeah, isn't that part of his job?
I don't think so.
It's not part of his job to have his arm yanked out of his shoulder socket. That is not part of the description.
To shake hands.
No, but the point is, if you literally at a cocktail party, like New Year's, post-New Year's cocktail party, you go up to someone and you shake their hand and you yank their arm and you cause them to have to go to the chiropractor, that person can actually sue you for that. That's unconsented touching in the way that it was done.
Yeah.
And the truth is, if anyone had done that to Donald Trump, they'd be in prison right now.
You think so?
Here's the thing. I think, you know, regular people would sue her, but the Pope probably just said a very nasty prayer to God and told him, get her. But here's the thing.
I don't think he did that. don't be casting aspersions.
No, I do think it's
interesting. Here's what he did.
What?
What he did is he was contrite about something he didn't even have to be contrite about in an era when the people who are criticizing the Pope, many of them are Donald Trump supporters, are fine with Donald Trump having committed 15,413 lies, and that's just as of December 10th.
Do you think that's because a visual like this, it's right in your face, right? So it's easy to say, oh, that looks wrong, or I'm going to judge this, versus obviously like lies and information.
First of all, the Catholic Church is known for molesting little
boys and
little
kids.
But
not in front of our face. So meaning because of like this, unfortunately, this viral clip as humans.
No, but let's be honest here, and I think that's what really made me upset, was people were so upset by him like taking back his hand, the fact that they don't want to have the same conversation when it comes to, you know, the other side of the Catholic Church.
Listen, we'd be having a different conversation if we had video of Pope Francis, you know, raping some young boy. We're not having that conversation. And no one is defending what the Catholic Church has done or not done around that issue. The question here is all of the criticism of Pope Francis, is it proportional or is it hypocritical? And the and what Shira said is correct. I mean, the fact that we have a video makes it a thing.
Makes it more real.
If we had a video of Donald Trump raping that woman in a department store dressing room, I do think that would probably have a big impact. So the power of video, for sure.
Yeah, and it's funny because there was this other viral video that popped up of him yanking his hand back while other people were trying to shake his hand another time, right? And someone who works with him, his spokesman, Vatican's chief spokesman, said it was a simple question of hygiene because...
Well, no, here's the thing. Seriously, yeah. It wasn't just holding his hand. People were kissing his hand.
Oh, they're kissing the ring.
And so if the person before you has some horrible disease and leaves their mucus or whatever on the Pope's hand and you kiss it, I mean, there's a case to be made that that's not a sanitary situation.
So let's talk about this then. Let's wrap this up because we have to talk about the double standards of obviously him being a leader versus obviously people not thinking he's human. And we've already come to the conclusion that he is human. So it's like he should be able to react in that way without having to apologize.
I think, listen, as I said before, I think if Jesus was incarnated, he'd be behaving very similarly to Pope Francis. He did the right thing. He was contrite. He didn't feel good about it. It was an emotional reaction. He was scared. He was jostled. He was surprised. He was in pain. He slapped the woman's hand to pull away because she had a death grip on his hand. And he did what all leaders should do and show some contrition. God, I would love to see the leader of this country do that even once.
All right. Well, Richard Green, thank you again for being here with us today. Where can people find you online?
So Richard Green with an E on the end .org, or I've been called Richard Green, the Civics Dean, because I think people need to know how the government works and to participate so that we can elect people that, you know, represent what we want.
Yep.
And go to Richard Green, the Civics Dean, on Facebook and on Twitter.
All right. Well, we'll be having you on for other conversations.
Oh, for
then.
Sure.
Okay. Have a great
Happy
night.
Happy New Year, guys.
Yeah, Happy, thanks, New Happy New Year. Everyone's saying Happy New Year to us.
Well, duh, now, Shira. It's a new year.
How many times? Let's take a shot. Okay. Details on the airline that just announced gender-neutral options for its passengers coming up next.
All right.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay. It's time for What's Trending in the News right now. Top of the hour, American Airlines is going to add gender-neutral options to recognize the identities of trans, intersex, and non-binary passengers.
Love that, because one, I just, I took American, which I will never again do.
Why?
Because they were the worst, and I had a 10-plus hour delay.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy.
It was trash. I was sitting in the airport, but it's not me, it's about other people. But I will say that they were very, like, a lot of places in the airport, I actually saw, like, the bathroom. It felt a little bit inclusive. I don't know. It was just there.
The bathroom, that's the LAX.
Well, LAX, yeah.
That's not the American.
But it doesn't matter. Think. Anywhere in LAX. I know people that travel that are part of like our community that that travel, and they still have a terrible time no matter if they're at LAX or JFK or LaGuardia. Like, in these big cities, you still are looking for inclusion and to be accepted in ways when it can be very difficult to travel.
I wonder what the most inclusive airport is in the country.
Ooh, maybe we should go
to it.
Let's
travel to the airport.
Let's just travel.
All right, well, this is how it's going to work. When customers buy a ticket from American Airlines, they will soon be able to choose two additional options. Aside from the traditional male and female, you'll be able to... check off U, meaning unspecified, and X, which is obviously an increasingly common marker for those who identify outside the gender binary.
Here's the thing. If the people that actually work at the airport aren't trained or educated on this, will this actually even work? Because my thing is, no matter even if it's the airport policies or, you know, guidelines.
Well, this is online. I think you'll be able to do this when you book your ticket.
Yeah, but if you do it online, if you pop up and you're there in front of, like, people, sometimes they don't know the policies. They're not learning anything. Well, so hopefully, how are they actually going to take that and know, oh, okay, this is what this means, instead of, oh, I need to talk to my manager to make sure this is correct.
We should get a representative from American Airlines on.
We shouldn't, because
well, I'm interested to know what happens if it ends up trickling down to the people actually working, right? In real life, how they treat their customers, because that is actually something interesting to look into. Anyway, according to the Movement Advancement Project, at least 13 states now allow trans, intersex, and non-binary people to list a gender other than M or F on their driver's license or state ID. So we are moving things forward. We're not there yet, but hopefully more in 2020, more advancements. Now, according to the Dallas Morning News, those who wish to request a U or X on their flight reservation, they must call customer service after purchasing a ticket. That's interesting. Love to know why. Currently, the American Airlines website still forces passengers to choose either male or female.
See?
Seems like this is something they're like moving. You see, this is what, if you're
going to
announce something, make sure it's set up.
It's all the way done. Yeah.
Don't make it more complicated.
Exactly.
Already people are feeling bad about this. So don't make them feel worse, like they need to take an extra step and be different, right?
But that's already what you're doing in some ways. It's like it doesn't make people that are using these gender markers feel comfortable at any point. So
of
it's
course,
just, I don't know. I don't like it.
They're taking a step, but like, just do it right. Okay, let's move on to Jazz Jennings, who we all love. She's now 19 years old. I cannot believe it. She's, of course, one of our favorite reality stars, LGBTQ activists. She stepped into a swimsuit and shared photos of her gender confirmation surgery scars for the first time since her operation in June 2018.
Which, one, we love her. Jazz Jennings is absolutely amazing here at Channel Q. She actually was a part of our Pride campaign, where we had people just tell us what Pride meant to them and all that good stuff. And she was happy to be a part. And she's just absolutely incredible and such an inspiration.
Yeah.
So she, look at her continuing to go.
She posted on Instagram, "These are my scars on full display in 2019. I'm proud of my scars and love my body just the way it is. I call them my battle wounds because they signify the strength and perseverance it took to finally complete my transition. Hashtag decade challenge."
Which I had no clue that she even got her transition. I didn't know she got her gender confirmation surgery is what I meant to say. I didn't know she transitioned.
Well,
fully.
A lot of people.
That's amazing.
Yeah, a lot of people commented, including trans star Peppermint.
Oh, said, love Peppermint.
"Work beauty. Body." Billy Lee of Vanderpump Rules said, "So strong, so beautiful." Isis King also wrote beauty. So a lot of people are loving her up.
Of course.
She's amazing.
Those are her sisters. And I think that's incredible to see someone as young as her doing that and standing in all the amazingness.
Definitely. An early Yaz queen of the day. Of the new decade.
I wasn't prepared for that. I love that. Thanks for that.
Well, speaking of new year, we were talking about resolutions before. But now there's, this isn't a new trend, open relationships. But it seems to be something that more people are talking about moving into 2020. Is this the year of open relationships, and how do you go about navigating that? We're getting into it after this.
All right. Here's the thing, though, Cher. Real quick before we go, because since I'm in control of the board, I think it's very interesting.
Oh, here it goes. Yeah.
The idea about open relationships, because I remember when we talked about it before that I said I was not into it, and you were actually on the other end of that, where you were having conversations last year.
That was 2019.
I know. So now 2020 me. I'm trying. I think I may be into it, and I don't know why. We'll talk about it more, I guess, when we come back.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, we're talking about new year, new relationships, specifically open ones. One door
new
closes,
year,
another opens.
I think you should say new year freaky relationships.
Oh, hey, well, we don't want to put a definition or open relationships like they need to be freaky.
First of all, no, freaky is a good thing always, no matter what. I think that's an umbrella statement that people would love to be under that umbrella.
I mean, listen.
Ella,
you're,
Ella, A.
Oh my God, what is going
umbrella.
On?
Umbrella.
Okay, I get it. I was just trying to think of a song, like a freaky song, so we could put it underneath in our music bed. Okay.
Oh, no.
An open relationship. A lot of people have been talking about that. Different types of ways of looking at their relationships these days. And if you're not sure what an open relationship is, even though it's pretty, what's it called?
Explanatory.
I'm sorry.
No,
I was like,
good.
I'm on East Coast time right now.
Yeah, you look.
An open relationship is defined as two individuals within a partnership who both pursue additional emotional or sexual relationships outside of their own, either with shared or separate partners. Now, could it be considered the same as poly?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I think, you know, actually...
polyamorous.
The real reason why I found this conversation so interesting that we were talking about this today was because I was listening to a great podcast, Armchair Expert, Dax Shepard.
Ah, great podcast.
Such a great podcast. And Dax Shepard, he was talking about in one of his episodes how before Kristen Bell, because, you know, he's been with her for like 13 plus years, before her, he was in an open relationship with someone for like 9 years.
That's a long time.
For nine
years. And that was when it wasn't as trendy or cool.
So for sure.
I give a lot of credit.
And here's what he said. He said he went into it, one, they were both two people that were, one, cheating on their significant others at the time. And so they went into it being like, hey, we know that we are not going to be, we're not going to be together forever. You are not my wife. I'm not your husband. So how about we just have fun with
this? Let's get freaky.
And so he was so honest in that conversation. Yeah. I was sitting there listening to him. I'm like, you know what? I kind of respect that in a way because yes, that relationship started off a hot mess because you are both two individuals cheating on your current partners and you're coming together. But then to have the realization, to have a conversation, to being like, let's just be honest with ourselves here. Where is this going? What does it look like? We're not going to tell each other about our experiences, but...
like, we're going to be each other's go-tos, but we still want other experiences right now because we're not getting married to each other. So let's have fun with this.
So I feel like last year when we discussed this, I was nowhere near okay with it, and I still kind of feel like I'm not okay with it.
And why?
Because I think there's something to be said about monogamy. I feel like me being a Southern person, like someone raised in the South, there's just some traditional values that I feel that are very needed for me. I don't want to say that the traditional values are one that's kind of wrapped up in this like heteronormative kind of blanket, but I do feel like it's interesting to say that I want someone that just wants me and only me. But I
and that's
do,
not wrong. That's what you want.
No, but I don't have a problem with maybe, you know, a cute birthday anniversary where we bring in somebody spicy that we don't really know like that, but it's just for fun and we have a little fun like that.
If you want a taste, then yes. You know, you could bring it in. But like to base your relationship on this idea, and by the way, we're not creating any shame around different choices.
No, we're having honest conversation here.
And based on our own experience
yes.
and what we think,
yes.
right? So let's be clear. And if you want to add an opinion
call
to this, give us a call. 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. If you have any thoughts on open relationships, if you are willing to go there in 2020.
I love that. Here's the thing, Shira. You are the closest thing, the closest person I know that actually did the open relationship thing. How did you go about?
No, I did not. If Dr. Chris were here, he would say I didn't do it properly. So I am not a good example because what
really?
I did
What did
is,
you not do properly?
What I did is I was having a hard time with my ex at the time. We weren't intimate a lot.
You were ready to sleep with other people, right?
I was ready. My eyes were starting to wander and I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to cheat on him. And I talked to him about breaking up and he didn't want to break up. And we both kind of were like, we still love each other, but maybe we are just going through a weird dry spell, right?
Yeah.
Maybe. And if we're going to be dying together, you know, is it a big deal to be experimenting and trying these non-traditional things?
So did you think the dry spell was one of those moments where you were like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity for me to bring this kind of new idea to keep us still intact, but try something new?
Yeah, I didn't want to cheat on him, but at the same time, I knew if we stayed together in the current way that it was at, I was going to ruin the relationship. Mm. So I brought something new to the table.
Interesting. That's kind of I will say this. I have to give you credit on this, that there is some self-awareness of being like, I know for me that I knew I was going to do something. Yeah, and I want to be honest with you and transparent in some way.
I was not being fulfilled. I didn't feel fulfilled, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I said to him, well, if we're going to still decide to be together, but we recognize that I'm not really happy right now. What should we do? And he goes, I don't know. So I was the person to pitch this. So I said, the only idea I could think of is we still live together, but we open it up where we're allowed to experience other things right now in this period of experimentation or figuring out what we want.
Do you think he was offended at any point?
No, I don't know. Because you know my ex. He like
no,
his emotional... Oh, God, I feel
but
bad.
Don't feel bad.
Like, no, but I feel bad because I feel like emotionally he's there, but he's kind of not. He was kind of like, whatever you think. What do you think? Which is really nice, but partially that was also his way of not making any
Even
sort of choices.
Even talking about it.
Well, talking about
for
it.
For you, though, if it was on the other end and he would have bought that up to you, would you have been offended? Because I would have been pissed.
I maybe would have, but because I was very clear about what I wanted and he was not willing to step it up, I feel like it lent an opening to discussing something new. So I said to him, okay, well, let's let's not, how it would work is we don't bring anyone back to our place, our HQ. Okay? No one comes back to our HQ.
No one's sleeping in the bed that we're doing.
But
our,
we're allowed, if things pop up, we're allowed. We don't need to feel bad about it.
Okay.
And we shook on it. We had a handshake.
Oh, wow. That's very...
All right? And then he went out of town.
Okay.
And then I was like, okay, free for all. I'm, you know, this is like...
But did you never... My thing is, in the, this is the this
but
is
then
the
we
moment.
Didn't talk about... Well, then I asked him, would you want me to tell you? And he said, I don't know. So we kind of left the gray... It was the
See,
gray area.
And that's what I'm thinking. Because for me, if we made... We've shooken on this and we're like, okay, this is what's happening. I, for me... I'm always going to be in the back of my mind sitting here thinking, oh, okay, if they're not in front of my face or on my radar, and if I don't see their shared location, they're over there sleeping with somebody.
I was
and
in
I don't
a different headspace. Now he tells me he's fooling around with someone, and I'm like, oh my God, we're not even together, and I feel more emotional than when we were together.
Yeah.
Anyway, after this, after the break, we want to talk about how to make an open relationship work. We have some expert tips, and also we did post on social media.
We sure did at LGT Show, asking, would you be open to an open relationship in the new decade? We have some hilarious responses, and our poll choices are out of this world, so get ready.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Open relationships. Is this a resolution for you in 2020?
It may be. You never know. If you are, I think you have to have a level of maturity to into the idea of, you know, having sex with other people that aren't your partner.
You know what? That's true, because I thought I was there, and now I feel like I'm back at the play in the place where I want someone to honor me, respect me. And I feel like once I would get comfortable with that person, maybe I would open it up. But I feel like we need to build the foundation together.
Well, I think the reason why I said I was kind of on the end of being like, oh, I'm okay with this in some ways, because I would respect if someone bought that type of transparency to me. I would respect that they're actually being honest before ruining what we have here.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's always been the case where he, like, the person always ruined it.
Although, wait a second. Oh, yes, that's true.
You know.
I was about to bring up, I have experienced recently where I was on the other side of an open thing, poly thing.
Oh, that's true.
Where, and it actually...
That's why you got to keep white people around you, because they are always willing to try things before me. And I love that. And you are that. You are like my
test dummy. And I'm also older. I'm a bit older.
That's true.
So I'm experiencing things before you and giving you my wisdom.
Yes, I love that.
But I experienced with, I had someone who I was friends with for a long time. And actually, we then, you know, had one of those nights where we connected more than we typically do.
Uh-huh.
And it was very nice. And then I guess I knew this, but I'm not sure if I did. He's poly. He doesn't like to put labels on it. But let
me
tell
you. That was probably some very big news for you hearing that.
I guess I didn't think about it. I was like, I think maybe this is interesting. Let me tell you. It's too much work. It is too much work.
Yeah.
He wanted me to get to know the other person, the other girl. I go, it's hard enough to get to know you, let alone another woman. I don't even care to get to know. No offense. And so, she was a drama queen, and it just got too complicated.
Wait, so Shira, you know, I'm thinking about obviously the drama that surrounds this, but let's even go even further thinking about families. Do you feel like you have to tell your family about it?
Oh, your parents?
I mean,
it depends.
Well, there's a point where...
Well, no, if you had kids. So I asked him what he would do for kids. He goes, no, I'd be honest with him. He's very into, you know, and I'm not judging, but it just seems like it could get complicated.
That's weird.
They will know this is mommy and this is daddy's girlfriend.
Nah, you gotta go, ma'am.
I just feel like you're setting your kids up for a lot of different questions and being unsure, which is fine. Just realize, like, they will need a therapist, probably.
I think I just literally just had a moment where I was like, nah, I'm not into it. I think I just had a whole 180 decision change.
Maybe, but I would love to have someone on where it's worked and find out if
actually,
they've had kids
we
even.
We have a comment on LGT's show Instagram. Someone, they really opened up to us, and I'm super excited
about that. Opened
up. Yeah, they commented on our Instagram at LGT Show. If you're not following, you should be. It says, my partner and I have opened our relationship at the start of the new year. It started with me asking their opinion on polyamory and asking how they would feel if we opened our relationship. After we had an adult conversation about, if you're happy, why do you want to date others? When they understood the idea that monogamy isn't for everyone, we started searching for articles and blogs posts on what being poly is like and how to handle jealousy/insecurity and where we can find support if we weren't able to handle those challenges ourselves. Now, that's actually interesting, because that's the first question that I think about when, you know, if we're talking about and bringing up this whole idea of saying, hey, my partner, I would love to have an open relationship. My first question and response would be that, are you not happy? Why do you want to step out in that way? And if that was the question to you, Sheer, what would you think about that? If they're like, well, are you not happy? Because I think in some ways you're not happy.
Things
if you
evolve.
Wanna,
wait.
But
we're always
not happy.
We are as humans always in a state of evolution and motion. So the fact that we don't treat our relationships that way is ridiculous.
No, but if you really think about it, there has to be a sense of a level that you've had to hit where you're like, okay, I have to change something. And oftentimes change means I'm at a place that I don't like. And so I think the reason why that first question is, are you happy? If you're happy, then why do you need that? Is a very valid question. I think I would ask that because in my point, you're saying something needs to change and something's not right.
Listen, I my opinion, but actually I have some data.
Okay, give me that.
Data.
Give me some of that.
A 2014 study from the Journal of Sexual and Relationship Therapy.
You found that. You couldn't even get a 2019 one?
Adult. I guess things have changed since. All right. Maybe I shouldn't even read the date.
No. 1984.
From
the
1930.
Data behind it. Okay.
Found that. I don't know if this is still relevant.
But I want to hear it. Tell me.
Found that. So
it.
If anything, I feel like if this was then, it would be more relevant now. But
yeah.
Found that adults within open relationships report increased health and happiness levels more than their monogamous counterparts. So they have increased health and happiness.
Okay.
So there's something to be said about that, where maybe you get to a place where you feel like you could just be yourself. I think a lot of what creates cheating or people feeling unhappy is they feel like they have to dim their light. They can't be who they really want to be, right? There's all these rules and regulations and guidelines around a relationship. I do think if you've built a solid foundation as an individual, you know who you are, and as partners, you know who each other are, and you just have a very solid foundation, you could then move into other spaces. I do think it's possible. Have I experienced it? No.
Well, like I said, we most definitely posted this question all over our social media at LGT Show, and we put up a poll asking, would you be more open to this idea in the new decade? And we have some responses and percentages. I'm into it to I'll just stay single and everything in between. Find out who comes out on top after this.
Okay, so we hit up all you guys on social media and asked you if you would consider getting into an open relationship.
Yes.
And we had a poll.
Okay.
And people were divided.
Actually, yeah. So the choices were,
let's
Sheera.
Yes.
I feel like I channeled you in some way when I came up with these choices on social media. First one is, yeah, I'm into it, of course.
Hey.
The second one was, no way, in all caps.
No way, Jose. That's what you said.
The third one I thought was a little cherry on top. I was just like, I'll just stay single.
Uh-huh.
If monogamy doesn't work out for me, I'll just stay single,
yeah.
Right? There has to be people that feel that way.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And so here's the thing. I would love to know from you, what do you think came out of all those three choices?
On top. I think people would be down to try something open.
Really?
In
2020, you feel like people are way involved?
Yeah, I think people are ready to go there.
Okay, all right. Producer Emmy is in the building. She's not going anywhere. She's about to leave, but I'm not going to let her go. Producer Emmy, we gave a poll choice, and we said, hey, would you be open to an open relationship in the new decade? We have three choices.
In the new decade? Oh, that leaves many years.
In the new decade.
Not just 2020.
Do you think people agreed to saying, do you think people said yes, no, or I'll stay single? Which one do you think came out on top?
I'll stay single.
Okay.
I think because.
For a decade.
Like, oh, for a decade.
Yeah,
oh,
for the decade. I'll just stay single for a decade.
Everybody's in there like
it's
single
only 10
vibes.
Years.
Like,
it's
exactly.
Only,
like,
it's only 10
not,
years.
People do not want to commit these days, and that's okay. No,
which
I
is
support
why open
that.
Would be the way to go.
But then why be in a relationship? Just be, you know,
yes.
Just be out there. Like, you don't have
yeah,
to, like, put a label on stuff. Like, once you have that, like, pressure of,
yeah.
Like, we're in a relationship, but you can do what you want, you know, one or the other is going to be either getting more or, like, whatever, and someone's gonna get jealous and someone's gonna get hurt.
That's
so just
what
be
saying. Yeah,
which is why I'm taking my time for this next one.
All
man,
right,
it's
so
gonna take
producer
a while.
Amy thinks being single, I feel like, and I already know the choice, so I can't really vote, but here we go, drum roll please. What and you said yes.
I think people are gonna try it out.
Well, you are wrong. People 54% of people said no way. The 25% of people said I'll just stay single, and then 19.4% of people said yeah, I'm into it.
Well, you're not as open-minded as I thought you were.
So there's not that many woke people here, Sheer. There's not
they're
that many woke people.
Protecting their
here.
Hearts and everything else.
Yeah, I guess. Well, that concludes our question of the day, our poll. Thanks so much for being involved in it. Thanks for all your responses. Once again, follow us at LGT Show everywhere. Twitter, the Instagram, and maybe soon TikTok.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, hopefully radio.com is going to launch a TikTok soon.
Maybe. They probably already have one. We just don't
even
know.
Yeah, we need to make it happen because, again, we are part of radio.com, by the way. FYI, that's where you can find Channel Q. Okay.
Yes.
Let's get into our Yes Queen of the Day, shall we?
Yes Queen.
Whoa, that was a great news.
It was a good
yes,
one.
Queen.
2020.
This one goes to, I would say, like there's two parts to this. India Moore, who we all love, of course, from Pose.
Yes, friend of the show. Yes, we love her here.
Who it has been revealed that they are the voice of Shep, a non-binary character introduced in Steven Universe Future, the newly premiered continuation of Cartoon Network's queer-inclusive sci-fi cartoon series, Steven Universe.
So I started watching this show over the break, obsessed with it.
Oh, really?
I love it. I'm not too big of a fan of cartoon shows, but that is one that tells a beautiful story and is so queerly inclusive. And the fact that India is going to be on there is absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
I'm dying.
I would say a Yas Queen definitely goes to Cartoon Network for doing
well,
this.
Well, yeah, animation in general. It's taking, I mean, and this show has been kind of a leader in queer representation in cartoons, and I think that is most definitely needed in animation.
So, yeah, you can find them as Shep in Steven Universe on Cartoon Network. Do you watch it on like one of those apps?
I watched it on Hulu.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's on Hulu. The whole season, the whole series is on Hulu.
But they are not on yet.
I think they just started. I haven't gotten to that part yet. But I think I saw a clip of the episode, and I think it is out.
And India's also been cast in the upcoming horror flick Escape Room 2.
Ooh, that's going to be exciting. India's booked and busy. Yeah. We're going to have to get them on the show.
They performed with Katy Perry on Saturday Night Live, appeared in two short films and a few music videos, also starred in the film Queen and Slim.
Oh, yes, they did. That I have other
I'm just trying to keep up.
Movie. Yeah.
All right.
It's a
well,
good, yeah.
Yas Queen, a 2020 Yas Queen to India Moore.
Yas Queen.
Holy mother.
You love it.
We
Stop
need to
it.
Record that one so we could play that on repeat.
Okay, yeah, maybe we should, but yeah.
And guess what? That does it.
That's
for our
the show.
First show of 2020.
I know. It was actually pretty good. I thought it was going to be a crap show, but it actually turned out to be
well,
a great show.
We started on a high note, which means it's only downhill from here. You can listen to all our episodes again as a podcast on our site. We are channelq.com. That's where you can get all that info and also wherever podcasts are available. Please binge listen. Become
yes.
part of the fam.
Why
Subscribe,
would you not?
Follow us at LGBT Show. On oh let LGT not LGBT
oh my god
at LGT show
you have
let's
one
go
job.
To LGT show on social media. We are sending you love and lights
and honey. Remember to slay.
We'll be back tomorrow same time 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q.